His own preparations complete, Sean crossed to them quickly and squatted beside Claudia. "As soon as the shooting starts, I want you to take Miriam and the children and run for it," he told her. "Keep heading south." He broke off as he realized that she was shaking her head and her jaw was clenched obstinately. "I've run far enough," she told him. "I'm staying with you." She laid her hand on his arm. "No, don't argue. It would be a waste of time." "Claudia, please don't," she forestalled him. "There isn't much time left. Don't spend it arguing." She was right, of course. To try and run further on her own was pointless. Not with two children to care for and a team of 50 Renamo on her spoor. He nodded. "All right," he agreed, and took the Tokarev pistol from his belt, cocked it, and carefully engaged the safety catch. "Take this."
"What's that for?"
She stared at the weapon with distaste. "I think you know what it's for."
"The same way as Job?"
He nodded. "It would be easier than going China's way." She shook her head.
"I couldn't," she whispered. "If there's no other way at the end, won't you do it for me?"
"I'll try," he said. "But I don't think I'll have the guts. Here, take it just in case." Reluctantly, she accepted the pistol and tucked it into her belt.
"Now kiss me," she said.
Matatu's whistle interrupted their embrace. "I'll love you," Sean murmured in her ear.
"I'll love you," she replied, "through all eternity."
He left her and crawled back into the piles of dead wood. At Matatu's side, he sank down and peered out through the chink between two branches towards the edge of the forest. For many minutes he saw nothing, and then there was a shadowy flit of movement amongst the boles of the standing hardwood, and Sean laid his right hand on the pistol grip of the AKM rifle and raised it until the buttstock touched his cheek. The silence grew out in the languorous sunlit afternoon while they waited. No bird sang, no creature moved, until at last there was a muted bird whistle from the edge of the forest, and a man shape detached itself and flitted into the opening, showing for just a small part of a second and then disappearing behind one of the thick tree stumps. As soon as it was gone, another broke from the tree line 100 meters further to the left and darted forward. This one also disappeared, and almost immediately, out on the right, a third Renamo guerrilla emerged.
"Three only," Sean murmured.
They were not going to expose more men than that, and these were good. They advanced in fleeting rushes, never two together, widely spread out, and wary as old tom leopards coming into the bait.
"What a pity," Sean thought. "We're only going to get one out of this lot. I'd hope for a better killing to get us off the mark."
He concentrated on the advancing scouts, trying to pick the most dangerous of their enemies.
"Probably the one in the center," he decided, and almost immediately had his choice confirmed as he saw the flick of the man's hand from behind the stump that hid him.
He was signalling one of the others forward, coordinating the advance, and that marked him as the main man, the one to take out first.
"Let him come in close," Sean told himself.
The AKM was no sniping rifle, and he didn't trust its accuracy over 100 meters. He waited, willing the man in, watching for him over the sights of the rifle. The Renamo jumped up and kept coming. Sean saw that he was young, mid-20s, with bandoliers of ammunition over both shoulders, and a Rastafarian hairstyle, ribbons of camouflage rag braided into his hair. There was an Arabian cast to his features, and an amber patina to his skin. A good-looking lad, except that his left eye was a little askew and it gave his face a sly, knowing expression. Close enough to see the cast in his eye was close enough. Sean lined up carefully on the tree stump behind which the Renamo had disappeared and drew a breath, exhaled half of it, and let the first joint of his right forefinger rest lightly on the trigger. The Renamo popped up into his sights. Sean took him low, deliberately declining a clean kill.
He knew what damage the 7.62 bullet would do as it plunged through his belly at over 3,000 feet a second. And he knew from bitter experience just how unnerving it was to have one of your comrades lying in no man's land with his guts shot out, screaming for water and mercy. In the scouts they called them warblers, and a warbler in good voice could inhibit an attack almost as effectively as a well-placed RPD machine gun. Sean heard the bullet hit the Renamo in the stomach, that meaty thump like a watermelon dropped on a stone floor, and he went down out of sight in the trash and debris. Instantly there was a heavy volley of rifle fire from the edge of the forest, but it was obvious from the wild aim that they'd not spotted Sean, and the firing stuttered swiftly into silence. Renamo was conserving ammunition, a sure sign of their discipline and training. Second-rate African troops started firing at the beginning of a contact and kept shooting until their last round was expended. "These lads know their business," Sean confirmed Matatu's estimate. "We aren't going to hold them long." The two guerrillas were still pinned down in the middle of the cut line, and there was a low, hollow groan from out there as the first pangs of the belly wound hit the downed man. "Sing to us, Daddy-O," Sean encouraged him. "Let your pals know how it hurts." But he was studying the forest edge, trying to get some hint of the next play before it developed. "Now they'll make a pincer move to try to outflank us," he guessed. "But which flank? Left or right?" And as if in answer, he saw a tiny blur of movement in the forest. One of them was moving right. "Alfonso," Sean called softly, "they're going to try the right. Stay here. Hold the centre." Sean crawled back until he was hidden by the high windrow of the brush. Then he rose to his feet and ran doubled over out to the right flank. 400 metres out, he dropped to his knees and crawled forward, finding another position facing the forest wall. He wriggled in behind a protective stump and marshalled his breathing, watching the tree line, the AKM set on automatic fire, and his thumb on the safety catch. He had anticipated the next move almost perfectly. The flanking movement came out of the forest only 100 metres further to his right. A detachment of 8 troopers, they came all together, trying to reach the cover of the windrow in a single concerted rush, and Sean let them get halfway across the cut line. "This is better. I should be able to get a brace out of this covey," he told himself. He had them in enfilade. His fire would be coming in from their flank and sweeping the line. He picked out the section leader, who was running slightly ahead of the line. Sean led him by a man's length so that he would run into the stream of fire, taking him at knee height because the AKM rode up brutally in automatic and he held the trigger down. The section leader dropped as though he had fallen over a tripwire, and the two men following him ran into the same burst. Sean saw the bullets hit them. One of them took it in the shoulder, and a puff of dust flew from his camouflage tunic to mark the strike. The other was a headshot, a clean hit in the temple, and as he went down, his baseball cap fluttered from his head like a maimed dove. 3. Sean changed magazines, pleased with the result. He'd expected 1 and hoped for 2. The rest of them had turned and were racing back for the forest, the attack broken completely. Sean got off another quick burst before they reached the trees, and though he saw one of them hunch his shoulders and lurch to the shot, he kept going and disappeared. Almost immediately there was another burst of firing back in the centre, and Sean jumped up from behind his stump and ran back to help Alfonso. As he ran, somebody opened up on him from the forest. Shot passed close to his head with that vicious whiplashing sound that made his adrenaline spurt hotly into his bloodstream. He ducked his head and ran on. He was enjoying himself, riding the curling wave of his terror. In the centre, there was a sharp firefight raging. Renamo was trying to rush the open ground, and they were almost across when Sean fell flat in the brush near Alfonso and added the weight of his fire to the defence. The attack wavered and broke, just short of the row of deadwood behind which they lay. The Renamo went ducking and dodging back between the tree stumps, with AK fire kicking up dust around them. 2, Alfonso shouted across at Sean. I put two of them down. But Matatu was tugging at Sean's arm and pointing out to the left flank. Sean was just able to get a glimpse of another group of Renamo cutting across the cut line and reaching cover on this side. The attacks on the right and centre had been diversions. Now there were a dozen or so Renamo coming in behind them. Within minutes, they would be surrounded, pinned down helplessly. Alfonso? They've got in our rear, Sean called across.
There was nothing we could do to stop them, Alfonso answered. There are too many. We are too few.
I'm going back to hold the rear. I'll be with the women.
They won't attack again, Alfonso told him flatly. Now that they have us surrounded, they will wait for the Henshaw to come.
A burst of automatic fire raked the pile of dead wood, and they ducked instinctively.
They're only shooting to hold us, Alfonso called. They don't have to risk losing more men.
How long until the helicopter arrives? Sean wanted his own estimate confirmed.
Not more than an hour, Alfonso told him with finality. Then it will all be over very quickly.
Alfonso was right. Against the hind, there was no defense. No more tricks to play.
I'm leaving you here, Sean repeated, and crawled back to the hollow in which the women were concealed.
Claudia had Minnie on her lap, and she looked up expectantly as Sean slid down the shallow side of the hollow.
They've got in behind us, Sean told her shortly. We are surrounded.
He dumped the empty AK magazines in front of her.
There are boxes of spare ammo in Alfonso's pack. You know how to fill these?
It would keep her busy. The next hour was going to be difficult to live through. Sean crawled to the back lip of the hollow and peered over the edge. He saw something move in the dried brown leaves 50 paces ahead of him, and he fired a quick burst into the brush. His fire was returned from 3 or 4 positions in their rear. AK bullets cracked overhead, and behind him Minnie wailed with fright. The minutes dragged past slowly, the silence broken every few seconds by sporadic bursts of holding fire from the Renamo positions. Claudia crawled up beside Sean and stacked the replenished magazines at his right elbow.
How many boxes left? He asked.
10, she told him, and pressed a little closer to him. It didn't really matter that there were only 200 rounds remaining in Alfonso's pack. Sean looked up at the sky. Any moment now they would hear the whistle of the Hind's turbos. Claudia read his thoughts, and she groped for his hand. Lying in the hot African sun, they held hands and waited. There was nothing left to say, nothing more they could do, no defense, however feeble. All that remained was to wait for the inevitable. Matatu touched Sean's leg. It wasn't necessary to say anything. Sean cocked his head and picked up the sound. It was higher and steadier than the soughing of the soft afternoon breeze in the forest tops. Claudia squeezed his hand very hard, digging her fingernails into his palm. She'd heard it also.
Kiss me, she whispered. One last time.
And he laid the rifle down and rolled onto his side to take her in his arms. They strained together, holding with all their strength.
If I have to die, Claudia whispered, I'm glad it'll be like this.
And Sean felt her press the loaded Tokarev into his hand.
Goodbye, my darling, she said.
He knew that he had to do it, but he did not know where he would find the courage. The sound of the Hind's engines was rising into a high, penetrating shriek.